The Great Chapter, Part 3, translated by Bhikkhu Sujato. Self-mortification. Mendicants, these four people are found in the world. What for? One person mortifies themselves, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves. One person mortifies others, pursuing the practice of mortifying others. One person mortifies themselves and others, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves and others. One person neither mortifies themselves nor others, pursuing the practice of not mortifying themselves or others. They live without wishes in the present life, extinguished, cooled, experiencing bliss, having become holy in themselves. And how does one person mortify themselves, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves? Is when someone goes naked, ignoring conventions. They lick their hands and don't come or wait when called. They don't consent to food brought to them, or food prepared on purpose for them, or an invitation for a meal. They don't receive anything from a pot or bowl, or from someone who keeps sheep, or who has a weapon or a shovel in their home, or where a couple is eating, or where there is a woman who is pregnant, breastfeeding, or who has a man in her home, or where there's a dog waiting or flies buzzing. They accept no fish or meat or liquor or wine and drink no beer. They go to just one house for alms, taking just one mouthful, or two houses and two mouthfuls, up to seven houses and seven mouthfuls. They feed on one saucer a day, two saucers a day, up to seven saucers a day. They eat once a day, once every second day, up to once a week, and so on, even up to once a fortnight. They live pursuing the practice of eating food at set intervals. They eat herbs, millet, wild rice, poor rice, water lettuce, rice bran, scum from boiling rice, sesame flour, grass or cow dung. They survive on forest roots and fruits, or eating fallen fruit. They wear robes of sun hemp, mixed hemp, corpse wrapping cloth, rags, lod tree bark, antelope hide, whole or in strips, kusa grass, bark, wood chips, human hair, horsetail hair, or owl's wings. They tear out hair and beard, pursuing this practice. They constantly stand, refusing seats. They squat, committed to the endeavour of squatting. They lie on a mat of thorns, making a mat of thorns their bed. They pursue the practice of immersion in water three times a day, including the evening. And so they live, pursuing these various ways of mortifying and tormenting the body. That's how one person mortifies themselves, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves. And how does one person mortify others, pursuing the practice of mortifying others? It's when a person is a slaughterer of sheep, pigs, poultry or deer, a hunter or fisher, a bandit, an executioner, a butcher of cattle, a jailer, or who has some other cruel livelihood. That's how one person mortifies others, pursuing the practice of mortifying others. And how does one person mortify themselves and others, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves and others? It's when a person is an anointed aristocratic king or a well-to-do Brahmin. He has a new temple built to the east of the city. He shaves off his hair and beard, dresses in a rough antelope hide, and smears his body with ghee and oil. Scratching his back with antlers, he enters the temple with his chief queen and the Brahmin high priest. There he lies on the bare ground, strewn with grass. The king feeds on the milk from one teat of a cow that has a calf of the same colour. The chief queen feeds on the milk from the second teat. The Brahmin high priest feeds on the milk from the third teat. The milk from the fourth teat is served to the sacred flame. The calf feeds on the remainder. He says, "Slaughter this many bulls, bullocks, heifers, goats, rams, and horses for the sacrifice. fell this many trees and reap this much grass for the sacrificial equipment. His bondservants, workers and staff do their jobs under threat of punishment and danger, weeping with tearful faces. That's how one person mortifies themselves and others, pursuing the practice of mortifying themselves and others. And how does one person neither mortify themselves nor others, pursuing the practice of not mortifying themselves or others, living without wishes in the present life, extinguished, cooled, experiencing bliss, having become holy in themselves? It's when a realized one arises in the world, perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those who wish to train, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. He has realized with his own insight this world, with its gods, Maras and Brahmas, this population with its ascetics and Brahmins, gods and humans, and he makes it known to others. He teaches Dhamma that's good in the beginning, good in the middle and good in the end, meaningful and well-phrased, and he reveals a spiritual practice that's entirely full and pure. A householder hears that teaching, or a householder's child, or someone reborn in some good family. They gain faith in the realized one and reflect, living in a house is cramped and dirty, but the life of one gone forth is wide open. It's not easy for someone living at home to lead the spiritual life utterly full and pure, like a polished shell. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness? After some time, they give up a large or small fortune and a large or small family circle. They shave off hair and beard, dress in ochre robes and go forth from the lay life to homelessness. Once they've gone forth, they take up the training and livelihood of the mendicants. They give up killing living creatures, renouncing the rod and the sword. They're scrupulous and kind, living full of compassion for all living beings. They give up stealing. They take only what's given and expect only what's given. They keep themselves clean by not thieving. They give up unchastity. They are celibate, set apart, avoiding the common practice of sex. They give up lying. They speak the truth and stick to the truth. They're honest and trustworthy and don't trick the world with their words. They give up divisive speech. They don't repeat in one place what they heard in another, so as to divide people against each other. Instead, they reconcile those who are divided, supporting unity, delighting in harmony, loving harmony, speaking words that promote harmony. They give up harsh speech. They speak in a way that's mellow, pleasing to the ear, lovely, going to the heart, polite, likeable, and agreeable to the people. They give up talking nonsense. Their words are timely, true, and meaningful, in line with the teaching and training. They say things at the right time which are valuable, reasonable, succinct, and beneficial. They refrain from injuring plants and seeds. They eat in one part of the day, abstaining from eating at night and food at the wrong time. They refrain from dancing, singing, music, and seeing shows. They refrain from beautifying and adorning themselves with garlands, fragrance and makeup. They refrain from high and luxurious beds. They refrain from receiving gold and money, raw grains, raw meat, women and girls, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants, cows, horses and mares, and fields and land. They refrain from running errands and messages, buying and selling, falsifying weights, metals, or measures, bribery, fraud, cheating, and duplicity, mutilation, murder, abduction, banditry, plunder, and violence. They're content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. They're like a bird. Wherever it flies, wings are its only burden. In the same way, a mendicant is content with robes to look after the body and alms food to look after the belly. Wherever they go, they set out taking only these things. When they have this entire spectrum of noble ethics, they experience a blameless happiness inside themselves. Seeing a sight with the eyes, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of sight were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of sight and achieving restraint over it. Hearing a sound with the ears, smelling an odour with the nose, tasting a flavour with the tongue, feeling a touch with the body, knowing a thought with the mind, they don't get caught up in the features and details. If the faculty of mind were left unrestrained, bad, unskillful qualities of desire and aversion would become overwhelming. For this reason, they practice restraint, protecting the faculty of mind and achieving restraint over it. When they have this noble sense restraint, they experience an unsullied bliss inside themselves. They act with situational awareness when going out and coming back, when looking ahead and aside, when bending and extending the limbs, when bearing the outer robe, bowl and robes, when eating, drinking, chewing and tasting, when urinating and defecating, when walking, standing, sitting, sleeping, waking, speaking and keeping silent. When they have this noble spectrum of ethics, this noble sense restraint, and this noble mindfulness and situational awareness, they frequent a secluded lodging, a wilderness, the root of a tree, a hill, a ravine, a mountain cave, a charnel ground, a forest, the open air, a heap of straw. After the meal, they return from arms round, sit down cross-legged with their body straight, and establish mindfulness right there. Giving up desire for the world, they meditate with the heart rid of desire, cleansing the mind of desire. Giving up ill will and malevolence, they meditate with a mind rid of ill will, full of compassion for all living beings, cleansing the mind of ill will. Giving up dullness and drowsiness, they meditate with a mind rid of dullness and drowsiness, perceiving light, mindful and aware, cleansing the mind of dullness and drowsiness. Giving up restlessness and remorse, they meditate without restlessness, their mind peaceful inside, cleansing the mind of restlessness and remorse. Giving up doubt, they meditate, having gone beyond doubt, not undecided about skillful qualities, cleansing the mind of doubt. They give up these five hindrances, corruptions of the heart that weaken wisdom. Then, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, they enter and remain the first absorption, second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. When their mind has become immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady and imperturbable, they extend it toward recollection of past lives, knowledge of the death and rebirth of sentient beings, knowledge of the ending of defilements. They truly understand this is suffering, this is the origin of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, this is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. They truly understand these are defilements, this is the origin of defilements, this is the cessation of defilements, this is the practice that leads to the cessation of defilements. Knowing and seeing like this, their mind is freed from the defilements of sensuality, desire to be reborn, and ignorance. When they're freed, they know they're freed. They understand rebirth is ended, the spiritual journey has been completed, what had to be done has been done, there is no return to any state of existence. That's how one person neither mortifies themselves nor others, pursuing the practice of not mortifying themselves or others, living without wishes in the present life, extinguished, cooled, experiencing bliss, having become holy in themselves. These are the four people found in the world. Craving, the weaver. The Buddha said this, Mendicants, I will teach you about craving, the weaver, the migrant, the creeping, the clinging. This world is choked by it, engulfed by it. It makes the world tangled like yarn, knotted like a ball of thread, and matted like rushes and reeds, not escaping the places of loss, the bad places, the underworld, transmigration. Listen and pay close attention. I will speak. Yes, sir, they replied. The Buddha said this. And what is that craving? There are 18 currents of craving that derive from the interior, and 18 that derive from the exterior. What are the 18 currents of craving that derive from the interior? When there is the concept, I am, there are the concepts, I am such, I am thus, I am otherwise, I am fleeting, I am lasting, mine, such is mine, thus is mine, otherwise is mine, also mine, such is also mine, thus is also mine, otherwise is also mine, I will be such, I will be thus, I will be otherwise. These are the 18 currents of craving that derive from the interior. What are the 18 currents of craving that derive from the exterior? When there is the concept, I am because of this, there are the concepts, I am such because of this, I am thus because of this, I am otherwise because of this, I am fleeting because of this, I am lasting because of this, mine because of this, such is mine because of this, thus is mine because of this, otherwise is mine because of this, also mine because of this, such is also mine because of this, thus is also mine because of this, otherwise is also mine because of this, I will be because of this, I will be such because of this, I will be thus because of this, I will be otherwise because of this. These are the 18 currents of craving that derive from the exterior. So there are 18 currents of craving that derive from the interior and 18 that derive from the exterior. These are called the 36 currents of craving. Each of these pertain to the past, future, and present, making 108 currents of craving. This is that craving, the weaver, the migrant, the creeping, the clinging. This world is choked by it, engulfed by it. It makes the world tangled like yarn, knotted like a ball of thread, and matted like rushes and reeds, not escaping the places of loss, the bad places, the underworld, transmigration. Love and hate. Mendicants, these four things are born of love and hate. What for? Love is born of love, hate is born of love, love is born of hate, and hate is born of hate. And how is love born of love? It's when someone likes, loves, and cares for a person. Others treat that person with liking, love, and care. They think, these others like the person I like. And so love for them springs up. That's how love is born of love. And how is hate born of love? It's when someone likes, loves, and cares for a person. Others treat that person with disliking, loathing, and detestation. They think, these others dislike the person I like. And so hate for them springs up. That's how hate is born of love. And how is love born of hate? It's when someone dislikes, loathes, and detests a person. Others treat that person with disliking, loathing, and detestation. They think, these others dislike the person I dislike, and so love for them springs up. That's how love is born of hate. And how is hate born of hate? It's when someone dislikes, loathes, and detests a person. Others treat that person with liking, love, and care. They think, these others like the person I dislike, and so hate for them springs up. That's how hate is born of hate. These are the four things that are born of love and hate. A time comes when a mendicant enters and remains in the first absorption. At that time they have no love born of love, hate born of love, love born of hate, or hate born of hate. A time comes when a mendicant enters and remains in the second absorption, third absorption, fourth absorption. At that time they have no love born of love, hate born of love, love born of hate, or hate born of hate. A time comes when a mendicant realizes the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. At that time any love born of love, hate born of love, love born of hate, or hate born of hate is given up, cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated, and unable to arise in the future. This is called a mendicant who doesn't draw close, or push back, or fume, or ignite, or burn up. And how does a mendicant draw close? It's when a mendicant regards form as self, self as having form, form in self, or self in form. They regard feeling as self, self as having feeling, feeling in self, or self in feeling. They regard perception as self, self as having perception, perception in self, or self in perception. They regard choices as self, self as having choices, choices in self, or self in choices. They regard consciousness as self, self as having consciousness, consciousness in self, or self in consciousness. That's how a mendicant draws close. And how does a mendicant not draw close? It's when a mendicant doesn't regard form as self, self as having form, form in self, or self in form. They don't regard feeling as self, self as having feeling, feeling in self, or self in feeling. They don't regard perception as self, self as having perception, perception in self, or self in perception. They don't regard choices as self, self as having choices, choices in self, or self in choices. They don't regard consciousness as self, self as having consciousness, consciousness in self, or self in consciousness. That's how a mendicant doesn't draw close. And how does a mendicant push back? It's when someone abuses, annoys, or argues with a mendicant, and the mendicant abuses, annoys, or argues back at them. That's how a mendicant pushes back. And how does a mendicant not push back? It's when someone abuses, annoys, or argues with a mendicant, and the mendicant doesn't abuse, annoy, or argue back at them. That's how a mendicant doesn't push back. And how does a mendicant fume? When there is the concept, I am, there are the concept, I am such, I am thus, I am otherwise, I am fleeting, I am lasting, mine, such is mine, thus is mine, otherwise is mine, also mine, such is also mine, thus is also mine, otherwise is also mine, I will be such, I will be thus, I will be otherwise. That's how a mendicant fumes. And how does a mendicant not fume? When there is no concept, I am, there are no concepts, I am such, I am thus, I am otherwise, I am fleeting, I am lasting, mine, such is mine, thus is mine, otherwise is mine, also mine, such is also mine, thus is also mine, otherwise is also mine, I will be such, I will be thus, I will be otherwise. That's how a mendicant doesn't fume. And how is a mendicant ignited? When there is the concept, I am because of this, there are the concepts, I am such because of this, I am thus because of this, I am otherwise because of this, I am fleeting because of this, I am lasting because of this, mine because of this, such is mine because of this, thus is mine because of this, otherwise is mine because of this, also mine because of this, such is also mine because of this, thus is also mine because of this, otherwise is also mine because of this, I will be because of this, I will be such because of this, I will be thus because of this. I will be otherwise because of this. That's how a mendicant is ignited. And how is a mendicant not ignited? When there is no concept, I am because of this. There are no concepts, I am such because of this. I am thus because of this. I am otherwise because of this. I am fleeting because of this. I am lasting because of this. Mine because of this. Such is mine because of this. Thus is mine because of this. Otherwise is mine because of this. Also mine because of this. Such is also mine because of this. Thus is also mine because of this. Otherwise is also mine because of this. I will be because of this. I will be such because of this. I will be thus because of this. I will be otherwise because of this. That's how a mendicant is not ignited. And how does a mendicant burn up? It's when a mendicant hasn't given up the conceit, I am, cut it off at the root, made it like a palm stump, obliterated it, so it's unable to arise in the future. That's how a mendicant is burned up. And how does a mendicant not burn up? It's when a mendicant has given up the conceit, I am, cut it off at the root, made it like a palm stump, obliterated it, so it's unable to arise in the future. That's how a mendicant is not burned up.